I saw Batman Forever when I was a child, and that was, you know, seeing Nicole Kidman, the way like Batman looked at her and stuff, and the rubber nipples and shit, like it was like huge for me as a blooming queer. Like, I wanted somebody to look at me the way Batman looks at Nicole Kidman, and I probably wanted them to be wearing a rubber nipple suit.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Welcome to the Man Whore Podcast.
Shout out to all the horny Harleys, the Joker Jack Goffs, the pervy penguins, and the kinky cat ladies. This is Billy Procida, and you're listening to the Man Whore Podcast. Sounds like I just read off a list of names of, like, kinky, nerdy football teams. We've got the horny Harleys up against the Joker Jackoffs today. These two teams have had a toxic relationship for decades. But I really believe in the Harley's ability to penetrate the defensive line of the Joker's butthole. I really think that she's going to be able to dominate today. Let's see what happens, John. Was I able to make sports ball relatable to the Kingsters yet? No? Okay, hey everybody, this week on the pod, I've got on filmmaker Vera Drew. She's made what she may have mistakenly marketed as an illegal movie. It's called The People's Joker. Going to tell you more about it in just a little bit. But first, I want to tell you I've got a new article up on Mashable.com. Apparently, I'm a writer or something now. So I just published a new piece last week on Mashable. I got a link in the show notes. It's about how Elon Musk and Twitter should really, really cash in on porn. You'll see quotes from Ginger Banks, from Mistress Snow, see stuff from Lotus Lane and Kendra Sunderland. So, you know, check that piece out if you like reading. And you want to learn some more about Twitter, an adult. My trip to Los Angeles last week, not too bad. I won't go into a whole thing shitting on LA. You know, that's for the stage, and that's not why you all are here. I want to give a shout out to Leah, by the way. Thanks for coming out to my show at the Fourth Wall Comedy Cafe. I forgot in the moment, but that was my 6-year anniversary of being self-employed. Thanks to you and your partner for a fun hike. Another quick shout out to one of y'all, because like a couple weeks ago, I mentioned on the show that I've been getting requests to have like phone calls. Now, listeners who want like relationship advice or just want to like kind of vent about a breakup. And, you know, I mean, I do consulting. I do consults for podcasting, monetization. I do consultations for like, you know, how to set up a gangbang safely. These are things I do get paid to do from time to time. But I've never had somebody just want to kind of vent to me. So I mentioned on the show, like, yeah, you can get an hour of my time. And well, one New Yorker hit me up. He said, Billy, big fan. I listen religiously every Wednesday. I've been invited to my first play party this Friday. It's the Astral Orgy at Hacienda. Want to know if you'd be open to me hiring you for a coaching session where I can get your advice. So, you know, we set up a call and, well, the party was on Friday and it looks like he sent me this as he got home at 4 a.m. Good for you, buddy. He said, I was getting my dick sucked by two beauties at once, and in my head, I just said, thank you, Billy. Sincerely, though, thank you so much. I felt so confident, and my partner and I had a perfect night with an amazing FFM experience. I'm glad my advice was helpful. I'm glad it could help you feel prepared for your first play party experience. May there be many more. You can hit me up for a dedicated hour of my time. You can shoot me an email at manwhorepod@gmail.com. You can also just email me your questions. You'll get less than an hour's worth of response through that methodology. But you can send me your advice questions over email. You can also send me your comments about the podcast. your questions about the show, or your criticisms about something dumb I said 5 years ago. You can send any and all of that over to manwhorepod@gmail.com. And yes, Mary Beth, I guess titty pictures are now welcome again, too. I know you've been waiting for me to open the door on that. So, you know, thank you for that. Let me do one more shout out before I get to my guest this week, Vera Drew. Okay, let's do the fan whore appreciation moment. This is like the most official shout out of the episode. I want to give a big thank you right now to a member of my fan whore community on Patreon, Zeta May. Ooh, this hottie joining up the peep show. We are so happy to have you. I love it when friends refer friends to their naked picture sharing group chat. You've settled in nicely. I feel like Zeta's like one of our female lurkers. Like, we don't see her body all the time, but gosh, do we get her emoji reactions. And we love them. Thank you, baby. And thank you for supporting the Man Whore Podcast on Patreon. And you too can become a member for as little as $2 a month and receive a slew of great rewards and exclusive access. Become a member today and support the pod you love at patreon.com/manwhorepodcast. That's Patreon, patreon.com/manwhorepodcast. Or you can download the Patreon app and you can find me on there. Folks, I have an STD. A save the date. Aha. Yeah, folks, save the date for our next hot movie night. Hot movie night is when the Fan Whore Nation comes together and we watch a retro porn together, complete with commentary over the sex scenes. Some of y'all are really fucking funny on hot movie night, I gotta say. Some of y'all's commentary, I'm like, why do I even do this show? Clearly, I'm not the talent, Cap'n. So if you are a member of my Patreon community, you will get an exclusive invite to the hot movie night, which this month is going to be on Thursday, December 22nd at 10 p.m. Eastern time. Put in your calendar, you know, post it on the computer, set an alarm. You don't want to miss it. Next week, I'll announce which movie we're going to be watching, but I want you to at least get the date down, December 22nd, 10 p.m. Eastern in the Champagne Room. And thank you again to Zeta May. Look, if you saw the nudes that she did drop, you'd be like, yeah, let me thank you twice. And now for this week's guest, Vera Drew, another person I want to thank. I want to thank Vera for like a really fun fucking conversation. I know she thinks it's a little ADD all over the place. I think it's just engaging and fun. Vera made a movie called The People's Joker, which is I'm italicizing, emboldening, and underlining, is a parody film, lawyers listening, it's a parody on the Joaquin Phoenix Joker movie. She has done it as a queer coming-of-age tale where the Joker realizes she is trans and then transitions into Harley Quinn, or a Harley Quinn-ish character. Now, I've not gone to see it yet, and you know what? Most people haven't either because, you know, Vera's movie got into a whole bunch of film festivals, like a ton of film festivals. Some big ones, too, including the Toronto International Film Festival, TIFF. It's a really big fest, and like right before it was going to be screened at TIFF, DC got involved and was like, this might be copy infringement because we have the Joker, and you're calling it the People's Joker, and they both wear purple and green and white face makeup. And so all these other film festivals have canceled their screenings of the People's Joker for fear of, you know, DC and legal liabilities. Okay. But that has not deterred Vera from trying to get her film seen. And she's got some plans to do so. So, you know, at the end of this, make sure you're following her on the places so you can catch, hopefully, a People's Joker screening in a city near you. But yeah, no, I talked to Vera when I was out in Los Angeles. We talked a bit about the People's Joker. But we also talked about, you know, her coming of age story. We talked about gender. We talked about quite a bit about comedy. This is one of those episodes where I had to remind myself at the end, like, Billy, deep breaths. You are not now best friends. This just, you had a great conversation with someone. Now put your proper professional boundaries back up. So that's how you know that I think this is a good one. Let's tune into me chatting with Vera Drew.
Yeah, no, you're going to get too much from me. You're going to get burps. You're going to get, you're going to hear my wheezing laugh.
I say bring it all on. Bring it all on. Vera Drew. Hello, hello.
Hello.
Nice to meet you.
Thanks for talking to me. Thanks for coming into my home.
You have a cool home. You have like one of those cool nerdy homes.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
What? No, no. Nerdy chick homes are like very fun. Nerdy guy homes sometimes can get sad, but like nerdy chick homes are fun.
Well, because there's an understanding of aesthetic. It's like, you know, like,
that's exactly,
you know, like displaying the movies you like is peak nerdy. Because I do have just like a wall of, like I have Lorraine from Back to the Future on my wall, the signed photo and stuff like that. It's all very nerdy, but we knew how to hang it up.
Right. And whereas in with boys, I think they just be like, well, I'm just going to put it all on the shelf and we done. Like when women come over to my place, they're like astonished. So my bookshelf is, I do, it's rainbow. It's like the color thing, but and it's it goes like highest to low, and then for the next color, low to high, and then high to low. Like that, it looks aesthetically pleasing, and I get compliments on because I think they're used to going over to a boy's place who like just has them stacked on the floor.
Well, are you're queer? Are you queer?
No, until they redefine that better.
Got it.
I was just asked that at the last interview I was at. They were like, "So, are you identify as straight?" I was like, "I'm straight." Until for whatever that means anymore, I'm a man. Whatever that means, I don't know.
And there's not really a good model for it anymore.
Well, just things are shifting, things are changing, and so I'm just kind of like this is the Aristotle in me. I'm just like, I think there are just think things have words and definitions, and you tell me what it is, I'll reclassify if necessary. Am I non-binary, or am I a man who just does manhood the way I do it? The straightness, like what exactly does that mean? Attraction to women or attraction specifically to cis? I don't know. So yeah, I was like, exactly. I'm going to hold on to all my privilege cards till you tell me I need to hand some in. I won't fight you. I'll just be like, yep, no, it's time. Here you go.
That's the best. That's really the best approach. I mean, that is what everybody should be doing. I was mostly, the only reason I think I asked was because you have sparkles on your cheekbones. So I believe that you would have like a nice layout in your home too.
Oh, thank you. It's all fucked up. I went to the bathroom at the pizza spot and I was like, I lost one eye's worth. I put this on in the morning. So this looks like at the end of a ragged House of Yes night.
It's pretty good. It's pretty. I don't know. I feel like this
one,
but
one of these, I feel like I lost a lot.
Oh yeah, but no, I'm good. I mean, I think that's what actually works about it, and that might have even been why I specifically used the word queer, was because it was not matching.
And I even put it on like a football player, but glitter. Right, I put them on under the eyes, like I'm ready to go into the big game or musical.
Wow, this is so fascinating. Because, like, I mean, so I've always, you know, like, when I saw, I don't know, just like where like gender politics were headed a few years ago, I was kind of in this loop of constantly saying, like, I felt like men, and particularly like straight or straight-ish cis men, need like their revolution, like their gender revolution. And it sounds like you're on some version of that, at least in the way that you just answered, are you queer?
With too many words. Is that, it's like, it depends who I'm talking to. It's like, I can answer it in the long form.
No, but I get it. I mean,
I get it
too. Cause, like, honestly, it's so, I mean, you asked me before we started rolling, if I identified as a lesbian, and the question overwhelmed me because, like, I don't know, the moment you apply like one word to anything, you're boxing a part of your identity in. It's weird. It's kind of the problem. It's the reason we're in all the messes we're in, I think, is all the words and what everybody's conflicting opinions are on them. And like, every day people on Twitter are arguing about what bisexual means for some, like, still every single day. I feel comfortable identifying as non-binary for myself. I mean, but I do just say trans. I'm a trans woman normally to people, because it just, then they know, generally speaking, they assume it adds a bunch of assumptions that I don't have to spoon feed to them,
right?
But
I bet it depends on who you're speaking to. Like, you might like slightly adjust the answer just for simplicity.
Well, yeah, exactly. And like, I don't know. Like, I mean, because I feel comfortable with she and they pronouns.
Okay,
And but like generally speaking, everybody just calls me she, and like I'm cool with that too. It's like I don't really like want to commit to one thing or the other, but like I kind of see what you're saying about, I don't know, like the non-binary, like just the word is a punchline now to people, and it's such a bummer. It's such a massive bummer to like kind of feel like in this like state of like in between,
yeah,
a little bit, without having like any sort of language to do it. Or do you like the lack of language to your...
Oh no, I like answers. I like to know the rules. I like to just because, you know, just tell me what's going on, I'll do. Or if I'm choosing to break a rule, I like to know that that is what I'm doing. I hate it when I'm breaking some like social norms rule that I didn't know was a rule. If I knew it was a rule, totally, I actually might have followed it. I just, no one told me, right? And then I just get called an asshole, and then
well, I mean, I basically just met you, so like, but you seem reasonable and communicative to
the
me.
The world is not reasonable. No, nor the world, communicative. I mean, that is,
yeah, no, not at all. It's very, but you just can't waste your time with people that are going to argue with you.
Do you not identify as a lesbian because you don't, because of the, how other people will treat you when you do, or because you don't feel as...
I think for me, you know, I've dated and fucked and ruined the lives of every gender under the sun at this point. So like, it's just like, it feels kind of ridiculous. Like, I mean, I pretended to be a straight cis man for 25 years of my life. And like, you know, was kind of a serial monogamist and like with women and like constantly thinking I was maybe bi or something weird because I didn't have the language for it. And like then from there had like a gay, like a little brief twink period, but a very self-hating twink if I've ever seen one. And then
what's a self-hating twink?
I had a web series called This American Drew at a public access network that I helped start.
Did they not let you use This American Twink?
No, they didn't, but it might as well have been called that, because like it really was just about me trying to learn how to be a gay man. And really in that process I was figuring out I was trans, and that like whatever that like burning question had been in the back of my head all those years had very little to do with like the people I slept with and everything to do with who I was and like where I, how I wanted to be treated and how I wanted to be loved, how I wanted my body to look and all those things. And I think, you know, going back to your initial question, I think I've had so many identities at this point too, that it's like to just suddenly be like, yeah, no, I'm a lesbian. It feels like the end of something. it feels like all these other ones were wrong and not valid. And it's such a loaded word now. Like, I mean, like there's so, I feel like, real genuine TERFs, like the people that really don't like trans people, like a lot of them are, you know, they identify as lesbians and they see me as a threat and to their queer identity somehow. So it's like, yeah, it's like I don't really like how, I mean, queer identity needs to be politicized so that we can have rights, but like it's just a bummer. It's a real bummer that like anything has to be, you know, anything involved in my identity has to be involved in culture war. And I think that's where the discomfort around that one comes up. But at the same time, like everything about, I mean, like look at my apartment, like it is just nerdy lesbian shit. So like yeah. Sorry, I just talked at you for like 15 seconds.
You are the guest. That's kind of the idea.
It is tripping me out though, because we are in my house, like, and I have.
Does it feel like rude, like you're hosting someone, but then just talking to them constantly?
Yeah, and I just, you know, I've constantly apologized for taking up space.
So. Well, oh. I wonder what that's about.
Yeah, no, it's something. It's a larger issue, I think, with me.
Something about like the entire world telling you and other people like you that you're taking up space you shouldn't. Right? Something like that. It's like, oh, you're taking up space on our swimming race or whatever. It's like, you never fucking cared about swimming. Stop it. You never, you didn't care. Do you see Sam Morril's special on Netflix? Oh, he had a just a great bit about that make
of fun. Oh, yeah. No, I think I did, actually. Yeah.
That clip went around on Twitter a lot, that particular joke. He's like, you never cared about this. Come on.
No, it's funny. It's so funny because it's like, yeah, it's just all the things that people care about now that they know trans people exist and have existed for as long as cis people have existed is like, it's maddening.
Yeah, it's like once you got like Leah out the race, okay, well, now you go back to not caring about women swimming, which is how I know you didn't care. Yeah. No one cares about women's wrestling in Texas anymore in high school. But they did fucking bad for 3 years.
Cop now. Everybody's a fucking cop now. And they think it's like punk somehow. They're like, everybody's a fucking cop and they act like it's anti-establishment because in their heads, the establishment is somehow wokeifying everything or something. It makes no sense to me. I don't even understand. Like,
I think people think queer people like are the establishment now, but that's simply just pop culture. That's just because queer people are making more fun, entertaining shit. So that's most of what that's a lot more of what you're seeing them 10 years ago because they're making more cool shit. And so you're watching that. So you think, they're not, y'all are not in charge still.
It's honestly, it's also really all it comes down to is like queer people have been making art for as long as art has existed. Like, I mean, the classic Disney films were made by just some of the flamingest homosexuals on the planet. Like, I can't, it's just, we're more visible now is really all it comes down to. And like, there's no like mafia in control of culture. Yeah. And it's not Jewish. It's not queer. It's not gay. There's just capitalism and fucking, yeah.
Dan Savage and RuPaul are in like a room somewhere, like, you know, pulling some strings.
Those two might be. You pick the two people that if there is a queer Illuminati.
Now who else is in the queer Illuminati?
Oh God, this is like the part where like I get a phone call from my reps.
You're like, Priscita, I'm trying to make another movie, hopefully.
Yeah, no. Well, I mean this in a complimentary way because I actually really do love everything he touches. But Ryan Murphy, I'm like, how are you still doing this? Like, how are you still making this like crazy, visceral, gay, violent, and often very vile and beautiful and funny and weird and gross and offensive? Like, he just makes really, if there is a gay Illuminati, he's probably actually the head of it.
Yeah, it's like, how are you making American Horror Story and Glee? How is that the same fucking guy?
Yeah, no, but if you do zoom back at the mosaic that is everything Ryan Murphy has touched, you see the full painting, and it actually makes sense. And it's very much just, it's a musical theater kid who like got the key to everything.
Yeah.
I get why people, he's not everybody's cup of tea too, but
yeah,
I love him.
I've heard he's had some misses, but you know, doing good stuff.
I have too. I mean, just not, nobody, people just don't know about mine.
Well, they're not allowed to see it, I hear.
I'm in a unique position where my biggest miss is also my biggest victory.
So I'm talking to you in part because you have a movie that's kind of out.
Yeah, sort
of. Or was gonna be out, called The People's Joker.
Yeah, I made a legal comic book movie called The People's Joker about an unfunny transgender clown named Joker who comes of age in Gotham City and starts an illegal comedy theater, and her best friend's a guy named Penguin. And I
live in Bushwick. I know a penguin.
Yeah, no. And he's based off of,
yeah. I got one on my block. He collects bottle caps and makes art.
You've got a, you, wait, so you really actually know a guy named Penguin?
I know, but I promise you in Bushwick there's at least three.
Okay, cool. I don't do well with sarcasm.
Oh, sorry.
88, autism. I confused the labels. But yeah, no, we premiered at TIFF and then we pulled all of our screenings because Warner Brothers threatened. Well, they didn't threaten anything. They just said they thought we were infringing on their characters, which we're really not. It's all, I fair used their characters. Mm-hmm. I really did just like make essentially a documentary film about my life as a trans woman coming up in comedy and you know, running away from the Midwest, aka Smallville. And I made a movie about it. And yeah.
What is your defense that is not a fair? What is your defense that it's not like in copyright infringement? Because like it is Joker and the smile, and there's someone who I would call a Bane-ish looking person, and right, so it's like,
yeah,
so,
his name's Bane in the movie.
Okay, right, so that's what I'm saying. It's like, like I love that. Like I mean, it says legal movie on, but what? So how is it not copyright infringement?
Because, so...
Bro, because nobody owns ideas, man. No one gets to, like, own the Joker. It's the
I mean,
people.
That is what every... To be fair, that is what everybody just projects onto me. everybody does just think I'm, like, I vibe-checked the copyright law and spent 2 years of my life, like, ruining my life making this movie. Like, You documentary filmmakers can take existing works and recontextualize them either for like academic purposes or to illustrate a point or to, you know, marry two ideas together. It's the same reason why like in YouTube videos when, you know, people are like reviewing these fucking Marvel movies and stuff, they can show clips from them.
Sure.
And that's what the movie does. And in that's what my movie does. It does that on a level that nobody's ever done it before. And I get why people are like, their minds are blown by that, I guess. But like, it really, it's the same principle, just applied to, you know, what we are told are our modern myths. Mm. And these characters that were constantly fucking shoved down our throats. I mean, I love them. I mean, you called me out at the beginning of this, like I fucking have Joker shit all on my shelf, like I'm obsessed with, I mean,
she's
Batman.
Got a full-on scarecrow head separate from like a scarecrow
well
doll.
That's actually from my movie.
Okay.
And that's the thing about it too, is like, I mean, a lot of people think that we stole clips from movies or something, or we like used footage from Todd Phillips' Joker, and it's like, it's all the material in it is original. It's all, yeah.
So when you were younger, did you try your hand at stand-up?
Yeah, I did stand-up for years. I was a comedian from the time I was like 13 till...
Oh, you were one of the fucking those?
Yep.
Oh, we hated you.
Oh,
we,
no, yeah, I know. It's why I'm not... it's why I don't really do comedy anymore. I was from the time I was 13 to 27, really. I was doing live comedy. Oh, yeah. I did stand-up. I did improv. I came up in Chicago. Mm. I started doing Second City when I was 14, and I had a sketch in their tour co by the time I was 18, and I became very jaded with comedy very young.
What stand-up jokes are you even doing in high school? Like, what are you even talking about?
It's, well, like... one of them is actually in the movie. It's a joke about my high school girlfriend's vagina.
Oh, that feels illegal to hear.
But we were both at high school at the time.
I mean, but I'm thinking, I'm putting myself in the place of like an audience member at a comedy club and be like, I don't want to hear about like 16-year-old pussy.
For sure. For sure. But yeah, you know, relationship jokes about your parents. Like, I also, you know, I was an improv fag. I was doing like crazy, like, I was doing characters and stuff. I was obsessed with SNL. I was obsessed with Mike Myers. I was obsessed with Dana Carvey. I fucking loved Peter Sellers. Like, I thought I like was related to him maybe, or mm-hmm. like a second coming of him at times when I was a little comedy dork. Like, I I had such a reverence for comedy, and it was a place for me just to play and pretend to be other people, because I was so not happy with who I was and had no language for it at all. And it was also the space where, you know, because in college I was doing mostly improv and mostly sketch, but also like I would do these weird shows. I had a band called Death Cab for Cuties, and we would just
you really like to toe the line of copyright. No, just throw an S at the end. It's okay.
No, yeah.
No, this is like, this will be like Scrabble. I'm gonna throw the S on it, and I'm gonna collect all these points.
Yeah. Look, I mean, there might be a theme. Again, you zoom back, you understand how Ryan Murphy makes Glee and American Horror Story. But yeah, it was the place where I could figure out I was queer too for me. Like I started doing drag when I was doing stand up sometimes, and it wasn't even drag. It was just like I would just fucking wear a dress sometimes, and I wouldn't even talk about it. I would just go on stage, and it was something about it, because I was more comfortable, I guess, just walking out on stage. You know, people are already looking at me. Mm-hmm. I actually was more confident up there. I was like more confident in a dress, or like, and I think part of it too was like, because if I was doing it in a comedy space or like in a fucking stupid video I was making with my friends, or like a dumb art installation, or like whatever weird experimental shit that I was doing to justify just putting on makeup and wig and nails or whatever. Like, it was like, I was simultaneously more confident as an artist, and it was the only space where I could outwardly look like myself.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that's all what the glitter is for you, but I think it is, like, the same thing of just, like, yeah, like, it's like, fuck you, I'm wearing glitter. Like, I'm more confident in this dress up here. Yeah. And it took me years to integrate that into my day-to-day life, but thank God I finally did.
So Joker in the movie, the story is the Joker transitions into Harley Quinn.
I mean, I guess you could say that. I mean, like, really, it's about a character who moves to Gotham to become a comedian.
Mm-hmm.
She tries to, and the way you become a comedian in this universe is you have to join a fraternal secret society called the United Clown Bureau. Yeah, it's literally was my experience of moving to LA, and like the way to do it is you either become like the worst piece of shit, like at least, and I'm speaking only about the era I came in. I'm sure the stand-up scene in LA is wonderful and vibrant and positive and lovely now.
It's probably not. From the little I saw this week.
Yeah. It was a cesspool, and like no like the opposite of what I had in Chicago. It was just like not cool at all. And there was that, and then there was UCB, which cost thousands of dollars. And I did do a little UCB, and I was constantly told every step of the way, like, you're really funny and you're really good at comedy and improv, but like, stop taking these classes. Like, you can't follow the game. You like, because they have rules there. Like, they have rules and they have a curriculum they teach. I do comedy because there are no rules there.
Yeah.
Like, and it's a playground for me to play and be, yeah, whatever I want. Yeah. So that's an aspect of the movie. And what she does in the film is she starts an illegal comedy theater.
This is also true. There are illegal little comedy things. I mean, yeah. Like little fire death traps all over the basements of various big cities where we tell our jokes to people who don't want to die.
Yeah, for me, it was... I fell into
this is a documentary. You are convincing me.
yeah, no.
You got to join a fraternal order, illegal little fucking fire, you know, anti-fire code comedy venue spaces. Like, yeah, no, this is all real.
No, I didn't mean to do this, but I think I probably will send this episode ultimately to the legal team just to be like, this is what we have now. This is my statement. When I quickly gave up like on doing live comedy when I moved out here, I'd say like after like 2 years of really trying to like make it work, it was just like, I can make this work, but I'm going to ruin my life and it's not going to be fun. And I'm going to be 5 years down the road and regret it. So I just focused on TV and film and making sure I was like, you know, growing as a filmmaker and as an artist, because that's always what I'd really wanted to do, was make movies. Off of that, I was working at on a show called Comedy Bang Bang, and the director of it, on the IFC version of it, the TV show, I was an editor on it, and the director, Stony Sharp, was working on, he just started collecting these like old tube cameras, like old studio cameras, like these cameras called Ikigamis. It's what they actually shot the first season of the Eric Andre show on. They're these old public access cameras. And he would just come into work every day talking about how he's like building this like public access studio. And like, it was like, what the fuck are you talking about, dude? Like, it sounded like a crazy, like Doc Brown or something, like mad scientist shit. And like, one day it was like, the studio was finally ready. And like, we went over and like Stony had just built this like public access station in his office. It's called Highland Park TV. It still exists. I still work with them sometimes, but it was really this like beautiful playground for me where I could just make these dumb video, just the dumbest videos ever with like no worries about networking or like who's gonna see it at the club or who it's gonna piss off or who is gonna think I'm ripping them off or blah blah blah. It was just like, I'm there with my friends, we got some cameras, some old looking cameras, it makes all of our shit look like fucking snuff videos. It was a blast, and it was exactly what I needed, and really that was where I did that. This American Drew web series was under that umbrella there, and it saved my ass. Like, I mean, I'm so glad that those spaces exist, and like, because there really are still like punk spaces for comedy to like incubate and like actually be cool and actually say something and not just be like fucking coked out lame aesthetics and like edgelord shit, like, you know.
The concept of, you know, performance as a space where you have this excuse to present yourself a little closer to how you maybe viewed yourself is really interesting to me. You know, how early do you think that was starting? You said you started doing like comedy at 13. And, you know, how is that manifesting as someone who is at the time identifying as this like straight boy? And then, you know, and you've mentioned having all these different identity markers over time. So what was that transition like from this identity to this, to that, to where you are now?
I think, you know.
And also, what role did any art play in those transitions?
Gosh, that's such an interesting question. And it's like, because of just where my head's at these days, I started microdosing shrooms this year. So it's like, I've really kind of deconstructed a lot of these eras of my life. And really, like, all I keep coming back to is, it's just like, I'm in a constant state of transition. I'm in a constant state of growth and change and moving toward authenticity and moving away from it, and authenticity is changing sometimes. And it's comedy itself was such a beautiful like place for that, because it is just like anything you can do, like you can do anything. Right. So it's like, it really made that process of my life, which is really just, I think it is why I'm here, like on a, you know, wooey new agey level. Like, I really do think I'm here to be in a state of transition, like for one reason or another. And I mean, my like, you know, PR answer is like superhero movies. And that is true. Like, I saw Batman Forever when I was a child, and that was, you know, seeing Nicole Kidman, the way like Batman looked at her and stuff, and the rubber nipples and shit. Like, it was like huge for me as a blooming queer. Like, I wanted somebody to look at me the way Batman looks at Nicole Kidman, and I probably wanted them to be wearing a rubber nipple suit. at 6 years old, I mean, again, sorry to bring up childhood sexuality, but at 6 years old, it was like, it really, there was something there, like watching that movie, that something clicked.
When was the first time someone looked at you that way?
I don't know if I've ever. Maybe that's really what the mission has been, is to find that. Still, I think I found it. You know, my girlfriend definitely looks at me that way.
I did want to say, her girlfriend is in like very much in listening distance. So I was hoping you'd eventually get around to. She totally does sometimes too.
Yeah, no, I realized. I realized midway through. I was like, oh yeah, you set me up to like actually like. Score some points with my girlfriend.
Either that or reveal like an earlier first. But I was like, I would hope it at least starts with her.
Honestly, I think, yeah, I mean, like, I also think, you know, there's a character in my movie who is Joker's like boyfriend in the movie. Mm-hmm. And he's also a clown. His name's Mr. J in the movie.
Okay.
And his design is based off the Jared Leto Joker.
Okay. Loosely.
It's a parody. Actually, it's a parody.
Parodying it is a Jared parody Leto's
of Jared
joke.
Leto's portrayal of the Joker.
I smoked
a joint earlier, so it's all the legal.
That's the reason why. Okay, that was a misspeaking. Yeah, my client fully, misspoke.
That was based off an ex. He's based off an ex that, I mean, I think we ruined each other's lives.
Oh no!
But it was a very traumatic relationship. It was a very deeply traumatic relationship, but it was also the first relationship where I ever actually felt like any genuine love from anybody on the planet.
Yeah.
Like, and not just like romantic love. I mean, just like, I don't necessarily mean that people didn't love me before that. I don't even mean that I didn't love other people, but it was just the most authentic and pure version of it that I had ever experienced up until that point. And it was simultaneous with me coming into my like transness and stuff is largely why that was the case. But yeah, he looked at me like, I think at least slightly like how Batman looks at her.
Okay. that's a look of like, this person loves me or this person is like lusting after me.
I think because for me, if we're using that metaphor, it was so surrounded by this like childlike wonder of like Batman loving a beautiful blonde woman, you know, and like it's like it really is. It's just fairy tale shit. I think it's like love. Actually, mm-hmm. I think you know, I'm a phenomenally gay person. I'm poly. I'm very horny and. Disgusting and despicable, but I'm so lovey fairy tale like Disney kid vibe. Like, I'm not a Disney adult, but I have a toxic fairy tale syndrome, and I think that's what the look is. It's like, it's real deep movie show-stopping love.
Yeah.
And my girlfriend does look at me that way.
Did you hear that? We want to make sure you heard that. This is good. Okay, good. Covered. I mean, like, not being able to relate to the experience necessarily. So what was like to try on different identity markers? Like, okay, like, I guess I'm a cis guy, or I guess I'm like a bi guy or gay guy. And then it's like, actually, maybe I'm not a guy at all. And then like, what orientation am I within this thing? What is it? Like, do you feel like, oh God, I got it wrong. Oh, I got it wrong again. Or what is that like?
In the early days, I think, yeah, I think it is like, I got that wrong. Like, I really, I carried more shame about my fake cis straight days than any of my identities, because it does feel like it was the one that was the least authentic. I was really trying to be some weird, like just fake idea of a man in my head. Like, I don't even know what my template was. I mean, I think it's why I got so into comedy, was because like I was an early WTF listener.
Dude.
I was really into like, you know, like neurotic. I would see myself in neurotic guys and insecure guys, I think, which is like, and you know, Mulholland Drive was like my favorite movie when I was like 18 or like 17 too, and it's like. That those two things kind of happening simultaneously, where it's like, you know, queer stuff is really cool. And that's like making me, that's okay. Like aesthetically, I get it, I guess. Okay, cool. And like then also just being very like, no, I'm this. It was the most broken and fractured I ever was. And I think that's one that is still, there's just like a lot of healing. But when it comes to like everything after that, you know, it's because I came out as queer in 2015. I came out as queer in 2015, I think.
Yeah.
And it was because I really had felt like I had given it my all. I was like, something is broken. I don't know I don't know how to fix it. I guess I'll just try dating men and other types of people and like see how that feels. And like it was, you know, this period of like, you know, like I feel like a lot of, you know, trans identity was starting to become a little bit more in the mainstream space. So like, you know, when I came out as queer, I think I kind of knew I was building towards, okay, I'm a trans woman. Mm-hmm. But I really wanted to be sure, and I wanted to go through the process. I wanted to like come of age, kind of. I wanted to kind of like, because it was,
you don't
also
have to skip all that and go straight to the final one. Like let me build.
Because like it's also, I mean, for me, like I think it really probably also did come down to like the queer media I consumed was so diverse, because it was like, because there wasn't trans like anything when I was a kid. I watched Jerry Springer every single day after school when I was a kid. I go back and watch him now constantly because those fucking girls on there and people, because a lot of them, it's like, I'm sure now would just identify as something like, you know, whatever. Like they're like the most fucking resilient fucking bitches I've ever seen in my life. Like it's in like, it's like that was the only real representation I had. So like the movies I was into were just like very, I was just into like very colorful gay shit, and like Return to Oz, and I loved David Lynch and John Waters, and you know, so there was a part of me that wasn't entirely convinced that I wasn't just like a very gay man, just the gayest man who ever lived, maybe. But like you know, you date men for a while and then you quickly realize that's probably not the case. No offense to the men.
No, none taken. If any of them are, chill the fuck out.
Yeah. I wanted to so bad. And it sucks because it's like, I really do. I go back and I look and I'm like, I was so attractive and I couldn't see it. I couldn't see it. I was like so uncomfortable in my body in my like twink days. Like I thought I had such bad, I had body dysmorphia and gender dysphoria and was fucking just mentally ill, mentally ill, and like usually running away from some sort of drug. And like, it was just not, it was like, I just couldn't, it clearly wasn't me. And I wanted it to be so bad. Mm. I so wanted to be a gay man. I really, it was an aspiration for me. That horn threw me off. Sorry.
Yeah, a little bit too. I was like, and me being the self-conscious fuck I am, I'm like, did I park in the wrong spot in the garage? Like, I was like,
did you? Oh, you might have.
Oh, shit.
I'm so sorry. Yeah, actually, okay. I can help you. I'm so sorry about that. That's okay. Like, I would have went outside and smoothed it over, but like,
that would take a whole thing.
She's such a fucking bitch, dude. She hates me. She bangs on the wall all the time.
That's okay. That's okay. We were talking about very lovely, sweet sentiments and finding yourself an expression. And why would I continue that? So why and how are you disgusting in with your interests?
Oh, God. I don't know. That's too general of a question. I'm Catholic. I was raised Catholic. I'm not still Catholic. I want to make that very distinct. I am not trad Cath.
I don't think anyone was concerned.
Sometimes, I don't know. I feel like I'm...
Joker's pretty blasphemous, I'm sure.
Yeah, she definitely says, fuck you, God, at some point in it. Which only somebody who grew up Catholic could really arrive at, but I was raised Catholic, and I have a ton of I have a ton of shame about sex, and so that's why I say things like that.
All right,
that
I'm disgusting. You had some like wild kink or something.
I'm sure I'm like actually probably the least. No, I don't want to say that because it would be cool to get laid off this appearance. But I mean, like, I'm not, you know, I'm not like into, you know, I don't like pay people to like, yeah, I'm not even going to make it. I don't want to kink shame anybody.
I don't know. I mean, you can throw it out there. It's fine. We're not saying it's disgusting.
I was also going to do a cheap one, too. I was going to like do the say Danny Thomas, the pooping on the glass coffee tables. Do you know that one?
I
think he was a TV writer or something, but he used to apparently pay people to poop on glass coffee tables.
While he's underneath.
Looking at the whole act, which I don't want to do, and if anybody wants to do that consensually, please do it.
When I was 19, I went to go see Kevin Smith do a Q&A in Englewood, New Jersey, and he told some kind of story. And the story, at some point, I remember picking up that it's probably not real, but it involved him, kind of being cucky under a glass table. Forgive if someone's shitting on it or someone like fucking his wife. Anyways, I think maybe now that he was just doing an homage to that, and I had no idea. Like any time I watch and rewatch Kevin Smith movies, there's always something I realize. Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah. Well, they're so loaded with words.
Well, it's like Kevin Smith movies and Bo Burnham songs.
Have you talked to him?
Kevin Smith?
Yeah.
A dream? No, I asked him a question at the Q&A. I have it on tape.
I'm sure he's within your reach. He's within your reach.
I'm tweeting him before my blue check mark disappears tomorrow, maybe.
Yeah.
I'll be like, Vera Drew says I could get you. I don't think I'm wrong. Does he not like you? Do y'all have beef?
I don't have any beef. I grew up watching his movies. I mean, he was one of my, like, in many ways, he was a queer icon to me. Like, his movies were so, like, it was the only place where people talked about queer sex.
Mm-hmm. Chasing Amy is my favorite movie.
That's okay.
I probably watched it easily 50 plus times.
It was so important to me when I was in high school. Mm-hmm. Like, and I had no understanding why.
It's because of that parking lot scene. Because you didn't get a map from point A to B. You tried it all. And I had to sit. That was how I'm starting to mix up interviews I did today. We're just talking about this in the one I was in before, where it was like, that's how I've been tackling my sexuality since college, because we had Craigslist in New York City. So it was like, I tried it all. I watched couples fuck. I fucked a guy's, you know, wife. I did this. I went to Bukkake's. I went to a gangbang where the chick never showed up. And that one was really weird.
That's awkward.
I was like, let's go give it all a go for the most part.
Yeah.
And that's how I figured out, like, and so because I didn't feel it. And also someone who's non-monogamous and did not know that's what it was and did not know language. It was just, again, like I don't have the map everyone else got, so I'm going to have to go figure it out.
Well, and that's why I love Kevin Smith, is because, like, I feel like particularly that chapter of his career, like, it was like, and as a Catholic kid, it was like a space for me to process a lot and unpack a lot of also toxic thinking about women that I had and still unpacking, you know, like, I mean, like, he really channeled that in such a fascinating way. The reason I would say don't mention me when you reach out to him is I have been critical of him as of late, because honestly, even for Chasing Amy too, at times where it's like, there's something about Kevin that like he is very fixated on queerness and talking about particularly men kissing and queer genitalia interactions and stuff that, you know, I think at times now when I look at some of his stuff sometimes old stuff.
So I just saw Clerks 3 and the homoerotic jokes that usually were there, super toned down.
Disappointed, honestly. I was honestly, like, Clerks 3, I was hoping for that, I was hoping he would go back in a little bit.
Were you hoping like Dante and Randall get like married at the end of Clerks 3?
Or
like,
something.
Just do it, you know.
Just do it. He says, Dante says to Randall in Clerks 3, time to take your hot pills, Tin Man. Like they are a gay couple, and like it was not, it lacked actually, like it felt inauthentic to those characters. Randall is a man. Randall Graves sat and watched all of a movie with chicks with dicks. He sat and watched that in the store in the first movie. He sits and watches trans porn, an entire VHS tape. Is it for irony? No, he's not laughing. He's not mocking it. I guess he's kind of doing it for shock value.
He's interested.
But he's interested. Yeah. Like, it's to me, it's like there was something there. And I was hoping that he would explore that more. I also just, I think it was weird. I think it's weird that he still is like, using the convenience store as a metaphor for his very successful film career. And like, I think, you know, what was so beautiful about Clerks and all of his like original Jersey movies is like, I was at least able to project a working class understanding onto his characters and really see, okay, here's somebody with some class consciousness and somebody who came from the same kind of family and suburbs and background that I came from that's able to make a movie and make it work. And that is kind of gone. Like, I almost feel
like Randall doesn't put it all on his credit cards or something, right? Like, it's not, you know.
He has to go borrow it from a rich person with a big clit. And it's like, why do we have to keep talking about this woman's big clit every movie? Like, what are you doing? Like, and it's his wife and it's... But yeah, he doesn't, that's why he doesn't interact with me is because I talk about him like,
okay, but you know what?
I wish he would though. Cause I still do love him.
I think I have your next project though.
Okay.
Since after what you've just shared I think you need to do a parody lawyer check parody film, probably like from between Clerks 2 and Clerks 3 where Randall and Dante fuck. Give us that backstory of like that awkward 2 months where they started hooking up and then realized it was kind of gay and they stopped. Like, I think you
fill in the, yeah, like, cause you, like, Clerks 2 is still canon, but like,
I think Clerks 3 is canon. I think it really ties. I really do like the idea of like, he's described that Clerks is what is about being in your 20s and not knowing what you're going to do in your life. Clerks 2 is being in your 30s and not knowing what you're going to do. And Clerks 3 was about being in like your 40s, 50s, not really know. So I do like that, but. I think I have your next legal gray area parody film.
Look,
to
I
do.
Mean, to be honest, I'm so tired of I want to take a break from
parody from legal challenges
from legal challenges.
You think? Yeah, good idea.
Just for a second, because I have
gets expensive.
Well, it's also, you know, I mean, I have two other, so there's two sequels to The People's Joker that I want to do. I want to do, because The People's Joker is my 20s movie. Okay. Like, The People's Joker is about what it's like coming up in, you know, as a comic and like figuring out how to be an adult in your 20s because you were unable to do it as a kid. And I want, you know, the second one, which I don't know if any, I mean some people know what the second one's called, but I'm not gonna say it yet, but But the second one is going to be about my 30s, and then the next one maybe my 40s, and yeah, like I'm definitely going to
as the character,
and look, I mean, at the end of the day, I do think I think people are going to see, once more people see this movie, it's really not breaking any laws. I mean, I may have made a mistake putting illegal on the poster. I really was just trying to get butts in seats. And sound cool and punk rock, because it is the most punk rock movie ever made. Like, I made it with like a bunch of people all around the globe during a global pandemic, and it's, yeah, sorry.
What? No need to apologize. You're doing great.
ADHD.
You're fine. No, I, because that's what I was going to ask next is, well, I was going to ask, well, what would the sequels be about and what would they look like? And then I was going to kind of close with, what is the current status of The People's Joker and anyone's ever possibility to see it?
People are definitely going to be able to see it. Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm figuring out a release plan with my team right now is kind of where it's at. You know, I went into TIFF. I didn't think I was going to get into TIFF.
TIFF, for those who don't know, is the Toronto Film Festival, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's a fancy film festival. Yeah. It's like a huge, like, it was crazy that we got in, and that was kind of as far as I got. Yeah. Like, really, like, that was the goal, was just like, okay, I guess I'm going to try to premiere this at a huge fancy film festival. I wasn't expecting it to, like, I wasn't expecting, because Warner Brothers knew about this movie up to 2 years ago. Like, mm-hmm. I've had meetings there. Like, I've worked for them. Like, I worked on Adult Swim shows most of my career.
Why did you, like, tell them? Or did you warn them? Or
I didn't warn them, but I did everything in plain sight, like, the entire time. I made sure, like, you know, but some of my, I have friends in the Harley Quinn writer's room. Okay. Like, I know some of the execs there. Like, they were aware of me forever, but I wasn't really expecting any sort of
pushback,
you know, pushback at all.
It's, and, probably, like, only because you got into such amazing festivals.
Yeah. And that was, it's, I mean, look, it's interesting too, who comes out of the woodwork and wants to be your friend after that happens. It's like kind of like, oh, okay, cool, they actually may see me not as a threat, but they're a little, like, there's something, this, like, okay, now it's definitely on their radar. And we just were not prepared for that at all. And now, because I'm fully confident that this movie can be legally exhibited, and it should be. I think it's a movie that, like, you know, trans people have been aching for decades, and, like, it's you know, I think it's a movie for everybody too. Like, everybody needs to see it, and we're figuring out the best way to do that. And we'll see.
Well, I look forward to seeing what's up with that.
Yeah. Vera, talk to the local cool people in your neighborhood and ask them what's going on with the People's Joker.
Okay. First, I got to learn who the cool people are, because I've never been accused of being cool, but I'll find them. Vera, you know, quick question. Do you have, like, another, because I don't want to impose on your time, do you have, like, another maybe 10 to 20 minutes to do a little bonus episode?
Sure. I'm down.
I figured we could do a little bonus episode for the Patreon folk about maybe get into, you know, comic book people probably on the queer side of things. I don't know. We can do a little shipping. We could do some fun hypothesizing in the nerddom, if that seems even interesting for you. I feel like you have, like, you've already, you know, kind of queerified Joker and maybe Bane. I haven't seen yet, but
Bane's pretty cishet in the People's Joker, actually.
Okay.
I think he's kind of actually, like, a role model of toxic masculinity. We weren't that creative with Bane. We're just like, he's strong and he's just a, like, bad dude, I guess.
Sure. Well, we'll nerd out in the Patreon episode for people tomorrow. But for now, Vera, where can people go to find you, follow you, and keep up with the People's Joker?
I am VeraDrew22 on Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr, but I'm easing back into Tumblr. I haven't fully dove in yet. And I might learn how to use TikTok eventually. I'm just intimidated by it. Everybody's on there is, like, half of my age. And, like, knows all these cool tricks and stuff. And it's, I don't know, it seems like a new program I have to learn or something.
Yeah. And that's where they can go. And they follow those. They'll be able to keep up with the movie.
Yeah, that's the best spot. I mean, yeah. VeraDrew22. It rhymes.
Well, Vera, thanks so much. And, you know, why don't you go ahead and say goodbye to everybody?
Goodbye, everybody. Thank you so much for having me on. This was great. I hope you got something interesting.
This is all good. The only note I have is cut down my comedy answer.
Okay.
From minute, like, 32.
Oh, it was so good, though.
No, I went a little long on my answer. I was like, I'll cut down my part. And most of my editing in the show is taking me out. Wait, don't you dare hit the next button yet, because not only do I have more content of me with Vera Drew, I have a sexy update that I think listeners of last week's show would want to hear. So just hold on, just stay right there, and I'm going to give you things that I know that you want. Do you want to see the People's Joker? Did you connect with any of the topics that we discussed in this show? We all want to know what you think in the Champagne Room. Our free sex positive Discord server is the place to be to connect with like-minded listeners.
And we have an episode discussion channel for you to drop your thoughts on episode 465. We're closing in on 600 members of the Discord server. I hear that's pretty good. So introduce yourself today at manwhorepod.com/discord. And then you know what? Invite a sex-positive friend of yours who you also think could use some online community. They're welcome in there too. Of course, you can always email me directly with your comments, your advice questions, or you can schedule a one-on-one phone call with yours truly, apparently. Send any and all of those inquiries over to manwhorepod@gmail.com. Okay, here's a sexy update. Sexy update, pregnant threesome. This Thursday, not happening. She's getting induced on Thursday, apparently. Monday, it almost happened for Monday, but apparently some sort of mucus membrane thing was starting to go, and I guess that's a pregnancy thing. I don't understand, but basically the pregnant threesome's not happening. However, she did say, her partner said, he still wants to watch me fuck her, so I guess in a couple months when she's recovered... Hopefully she's lactating. Hey, that could be a hot element. Lactating threesome? That's a good consolation for no pregnant threesome. By the way, you know, shout out to everybody who's been sharing their Spotify Wrapped. I don't know how to pluralize that. Spotify Wrapped. But thanks for sharing those, folks, particularly those of you who have the Man Whore Podcast listed in your top podcasts. Very honored to be up there for so many of you. Please keep sharing them on social media. Please keep tagging me so I know. And if you want to show off your top podcast list, but you think it's a little too slutty for mom to see, hey, you can always share it in the champagne room. Most of you, in fact, have been sharing them more anonymously in the champagne room than posting on social media. I understand. I love you all the same. Now, as you heard at the end of the conversation, Veer and I have a bonus episode coming out exclusively on Patreon tomorrow. It's going to be available for all of my $5 and up fan whores, and I'm going to give you a tease. I'm giving you a teaser of that right now. You're going to get an idea of what these bonus episodes sound like. So you want to support your buddy. You want to help me hit my rent goal of $1,300 by the end of the year. Gain access, help a whore, enjoy at patreon.com/manwhorepodcast. Again, that's Patreon, patreon.com/manwhorepodcast, or download the Patreon app and you can find me on there. This bonus episode, we're talking a bit more about kind of like nerdy queer theory. I'll just kind of leave it at that. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. And as always, stay slutty.
I got a note on a show I was writing. Fuck it. I was hired to work on a reboot of that I don't think will ever come out, unfortunately. But I made a joke on there about identifying as genderqueer. And obviously. Is like total trad wife, like completely always wears an apron whenever they go to the beach in a fucking bathing suit. But still uses he, him. So genderqueer felt right to me as a non-binary trans woman. I have friends who identify as genderqueer. I got a note from GLAAD saying that that was an outdated term. I have friends who still identify as genderqueer. Is that an outdated term then? If those people still exist? Like, it's like, why am I even getting this note from GLAAD, from an organization that's supposed to apparently like... nurture homos like me? Like, what are we doing here?